Welcome to the Gay Buddhist Forum, where teachers from all schools of Buddhism offer their perspectives on the Dharma and its application in modern times, especially for LGBTQI audiences. These talks are offered freely to the world and made possible by appreciative listeners. If you would like to support our efforts to share the Dharma with underserved audiences, please visit gaybuddhist.org. There you can donate, find a list of upcoming speakers, or enjoy many hundreds of these recorded talks dating back to 1996.
Good morning, everyone. I will introduce the speaker today. We're happy to have Reverend Dagan Gaither, him. So he began Buddhist practice in 1995 in Vipassana Insight tradition, and then began to study Zen in 2003. He received lay ordination in 2006, where he was given the name of Daigan or Great Vow, and received priest ordinations in July 2011. Daigan speaks intentionally on a variety of topics, particularly around gender, sexuality, social justice, and their intersections with the Dharma. He also sits or has sat on a number of boards and committees that serve community needs and further social justice causes. Daigan has a BA in philosophy and religion from San Francisco State University and an MA in Buddhist studies with a chaplaincy certificate and a certificate in Soto Zen Buddhism from the Graduate Theological Union and the Institute of Buddhist Studies. You can find out more via his website, queerdharma.net. He lives in San Francisco and identifies as a disabled, queer, white, cis male. Welcome, Daigan.
Thank you all very much. Thank you for being here. As we did at the start of meditation, I want to also just take a moment for all of us to, as we settle in, to just bring to mind and send metta to Paul Shepherd, who passed away this week. A longtime member of this Sangha, may he and all who are grieving find ease and comfort. Let's start off with a short poem by William Stafford. Starting here, what do you want to remember? How sunlight creeps along the shining floor? What scent of old wood hovers? What softened sound from outside fills the air? Will you ever bring a better gift to the world than the breathing respect that you carry wherever you go right now? Are you waiting for time to show you some better thoughts? When you turn around, starting here, lift this new glimpse that you found, carrying into the evening all that you want from this day. This interval you spent reading or hearing this, keep it for life. What can anyone give you greater than now, starting here, right in this room, when you turn around? The more I practice and the longer I practice, I'm really fascinated by what does it mean to practice? What is it that I, why do I do this? What's the purpose? And what is it that I'm doing, right? Am I just meditating every day and doing the ceremonies that I do? And is that what it means to practice? Or is there something more going on? Is there something deeper going on? Is there something that happens in that process that I can then take with me as I go throughout my day? Because, you know, I don't get to spend all day in meditation. I don't get to spend all day doing ceremonies. I don't get to spend my days doing what I think when we first start off, we think of as practice. And I think that for me, I find it really fascinating because I think that one of the things that I'm starting to slowly understand is that even though this is a practice where we're focused on or give priority to no abiding, separate self, no self that is disconnected from the arising of everyone, and no self that continues on without change. And yet, my practice really is all about sort of, well, what's this? What's happening here? What is this? And how do I, what is the effect of my opinions and judgments and ideas on the expression of this current moment? When I sit down to meditate, that's sort of what I'm doing. I'm noticing the thoughts and ideas or the sensations that arise, and then I'm noticing my own reactions to it, my own responses to it. And so this practice that's centered on no self, no abiding self, asks us repeatedly to question the self, to really turn, in the words of Dogen, turn the light inward. And I think that what's interesting about that, for me anyway, is that the more that I can practice that off the cushion with some degree of integrity and honesty, the more that I can start to really question. So, you know, I'm sitting across from someone, particularly if I'm in disagreement. Before I can really connect to what it is that is disagreeable to me, I have to first connect with, well, what's happening with me? What's my part in creating this moment? And oftentimes that means I have to sort of get clear about my own arisings, my own habits of mind, my own feelings, my own judgments, my own ideas about who I am in this moment. And then what does this moment have to tell me about myself? And so for me, I think that the more that I can practice with this idea of continually turning the light inward, that allows me to create these moments of intimacy, because it asks me to be vulnerable. It asks me to tell the truth of my experience of this moment. And that vulnerability, I think, is the best way for me to learn how to interact in the world in a way that leads me closer to some idea about fulfilling my vows, some idea about liberation. Because if I'm going to have experiences of liberation, it's going to come through this truth-telling, this understanding of what's going on in this set of skandhas, in this skin bag, what's happening? And how is that impacting my engagement in this moment? You know, we understand karma as action and activity, and the results of that action and activity. And we understand that karma in this moment creates the karma in the next moment. And so if this moment creates the next moment, creates the next moment, I always have this option to bring more intimacy to this moment. I always have the option of trying to see underneath my habits of mind or my ideas about something and the ways in which I concretize this moment and this idea of myself. And I can see underneath that to develop a connection and some kind of honesty to this experience. And in my experience, when I do that, It also gives the other people participating in this moment the ability or permission to sometimes do that themselves. So what does that look like on paper? Because I'm also sort of a realist. I really, like, it's one thing to talk about theory and theoreticals, but then what does it look like on the ground when I'm trying to actually do this thing, right? And so last night I was engaged in a conversation with a friend of mine. And it's a friend who just recently ordained, and it's someone I love dearly and have practiced with for a long time. And what I noticed was I had this idea at the beginning of our conversation about something I wanted to communicate. And because of that, everything that was happening in that conversation, I would try to sort of turn it towards that idea that I was trying to communicate. And sometimes it was appropriate because it was actually sort of in line with what it was I was trying to say. And then other times it was like this performative kind of forcing this idea into this, constricting it into this idea that I was trying to convey. And I just kept holding on to this idea until about halfway through the conversation, my friend just looked at, we were on FaceTime, looked at me and said, "What's going on? Like, I feel like you're not really here." And we were able to sort of take a breath and take a moment. And I realized I'm holding on to this idea about something that I was supposed to communicate to this friend of mine. And regardless of the conversation we were having, I was going to make that happen. And I caught on, and I said to her, I was like, "I'm wanting to say something, and I'm trying to make everything about that thing." And she's like, "Well, what are you trying to say?" And I told her, and she's like, "Well, you said that in the beginning, and I moved on from there." And I was like, "Yeah, but I didn't." And we were able to have a good laugh about it. And then we moved on into something more intimate, something more connected, something more liberating, because we were both in the conversation instead of in our ideas about the conversation, instead of some agenda about the conversation. And I just thought, wow, that's what it means to really practice an intimate context with someone else, right? Like, to be able to tell her what was really happening for me, for her to be able to just say to me, like, "What's going on? This is not right. Whatever's happening here is not how I want to interact with you." And then for me to be able to sort of turn the light inward and see what was going on, and then make corrections to it, because I could look at it honestly, because I could tell myself the truth about my habits of mind and my own experience of this moment. And I think that at the end of the day, that's what I want to do with myself on the cushion. That's what I want to do in my life in general. Constantly question, well, what am I bringing into this moment? What am I bringing into this conversation? What's the story or idea or judgment or opinion that I have that is bringing and influencing the construction of this moment? And can I somehow see through that enough to let that moment be liberatory, to lead me towards liberation, to some genuine expression of enlightenment in this moment, or realization in this moment? Starting here, what do you want to remember? how sunlight creeps along a shining floor, what scent of old wood hovers, what softened sound from outside fills the air. Will you ever bring a better gift for the world than the breathing respect that you carry wherever you go right now? Are you waiting for time to show you some better thoughts? When you turn around, starting here, lift this new glimpse that you found. Carry into evening all that you want from this day. This interval you spent reading or hearing this, keep it for life. What can anyone give you greater than now? Starting here, right in this room, when you turn around. What greater gift can we give than ourselves right now? What if this is as good as it gets? What if this moment is absolutely perfect, exactly as it is? How will that change my response here? Thank you for your practice. I thank you for being here. I thank you for joining us. And I'd like to invite you to bring our collective wisdom forth and comment, ask questions, help me clarify.
Hi.
Hi, Kat.
Hi, Dragan.
Hi, sister.
Good to see you. I keep trying to give of myself, but the fucking COVID and monkeypox are like getting, are subverting that. So I guess I'm kind of curious what you, how you like make use of practice to, you know, deal with like, oh hell, you know, another sexually transmitted disease, or to deal with like not getting fatalistic and losing hope that you'll ever connect with somebody again.
yeah.
And just, I mean, you know, we have ways of sort of bucking ourselves up. But how do you use practice to navigate right what we're going through now?
So one, in the interest of truth telling, it's not a sexually, monkeypox is not sexually transmitted. It's intimately transmitted. The reason we're seeing more cases in gay male culture is because gay men tend to take better care of their health because of the AIDS epidemic. And we test more. We do all the things more. So when you test more, you're going to see more. So I first want to say it's about intimacy, right? It's from close contact with people who are infected. Does that mean we don't have close contact? No. It means we're mindful of the close contact we have so that we can bring our whole selves into this moment, right? Same thing with COVID, right? Like, I've managed to go this whole pandemic, knock wood, without getting infected. But I think despite the fact that I'm in and out of hospitals and nursing homes and things all the time, but you know, I listen to the science and I like wear my mask and I wash my hands and I'm very careful about what I touch and what I don't touch and how I interact in the world. And I bring my practice of mindfulness and attention so that I don't have to limit my own ability to be there. Right? So because I wear my mask, because I know I've washed my hands, because I'm careful about what I touch, I'm able to be there really fully and engage completely in the moment without worrying, oh, am I infecting myself? Am I putting myself at risk? blah, 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 like the whole thing. Now, it's really interesting because I just took a trip to Austin to visit my parent, my mom, and to teach down there at the Austin Zen Center. And it was really interesting because I spent the whole time on the airplane paranoid, 5-hour flight, completely paranoid. And I couldn't focus on, I brought things to read and ways to prep for my workshop and, you know, all the things. And I couldn't focus because I was just completely paranoid about being on this airplane with all these people. And at the end of it, I thought, well, that wasn't really useful, right? Like, that wasn't practicing in this space, right? When I knew, I wore my mask and I kept my hands clean and I didn't drink or touch anything and I wasn't, like, you know, leaning on my neighbor or whatever. Like, I was doing all the things that I do to take care of myself. And so I could logically bring my whole self there, but my habit of mind is to be paranoid and freak out and worry. And this time I couldn't let that go. And maybe it's because I was on an airplane with, you know, dozens of other people. So that's two different ways to sort of experience this, right? There's the way of, like, having some faith in how I take care of myself and I take care of the moment and I take care of the people I'm interacting with. Because I also spend a lot of time with people who are way older than me and who I could easily infect and kill. So there's a way that my taking care of my wearing a mask and washing my hands and doing all the things is also me taking care of my patients. But it does allow me to relax into the moment and just experience what I'm experiencing while I'm experiencing it. Did that help? Did that clarify?
Yeah, thank you.
So I have a question too. And by the way, thank you for your talk, Daigan. I was thinking about moments in which I feel the same way you described, in conflict with others. And with some particular people in which, like, this happens a lot, I feel like my body is very trained to, like, shrink whenever that happens. And, like, for me to feel, like, very defensive and victimize myself, put the other person as, like, someone that is very bad and so on. And I'm even able to recognize that. And I have, like, a little practice of, like, exhaling and trying to let that go for a little bit. But that sometimes, like, those relationships, they create an anxiety that makes it very hard for me to give myself into, like, a moment, even after I let it go. You know, like, it's almost like there's a cloud behind it. And I just cannot be fully present when those things are, they're a little, like, edgy for, like, the whole week. And I was wondering if you can share a little practice that you have, like, for, to give yourself into those moments more fully. Yeah.
Just like, we often trap ourselves in our ideas about ourselves, and that part of our practice is to kind of let that go and realize that we're constantly changing and interconnected, right? And that we're not the same person we were yesterday. I notice in my relationships, especially some of my longer-term relationships, it's so hard to let them not be my ideas about them. To give myself permission to let them be different. Right? This is especially true in my family, with my brothers and my mom, and the ways in which my history of them influences my inability to let them be different, to let them change and grow in the same ways that I have, right? And so even though I'm working on letting myself be more present in the moment, I'm letting myself not shrink so much. I'm trying to work on ways to not trap myself in my own habits of mind. I also have to be mindful of not trapping them in my habits of mind. And that sometimes is much harder, right? Because I don't get access to all of them the way I get access to all of me, right? I only get my ideas about them. I only get my responses to them, how they make me feel. And not even, sometimes it's not even how they make me feel in this moment. It's how they made me feel the last moment that felt kind of like this moment. So for me, part of it is to give people permission to be different. Shinryu Suzuki, the guy who founded San Francisco Zen Center, where I spent a lot of time, the first thing I ever learned that he said was, the secret to Zen is two words, not always so. And at first you kind of think, oh, that's really cute. And then you really deep, what changes if I make this not always so? What if this moment isn't always the way it always goes? And so with my mom, a lot of times I just have this idea in my mind that just goes, maybe, like, I'll have some response to her and some idea about what she's saying and what it means and la la la. And then I'll just say to myself, maybe. Which then opens it up some way for me. Does that make sense? Did that help?
It does. It does. Thank you, Dagan.
Thank you. And I think we're at time, correct?
We actually have until 11:50 for...
Oh, 11:50. I thought it was 11:30.
I'm sorry about that.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. I like left way too much on the table there. In my effort to leave space for time, I left more stuff. But let's keep asking questions. I think this is really good stuff. Like, let's keep asking questions or commenting. Like, what does that lead you to? What do you think about this?
So I think Tom has his hand raised. So.
Dagan, thank you so much. Always a pleasure hearing you. Wish we could see you in person, get one of your big hugs. You know, what you said about that conversation with your friend and like not being present or being somewhere else in your mind so resonated with me. I speak every day a couple of times to my best friend who is like hyper-intuitive, almost annoyingly so. And even though we're just on the phone, you know, audio only, you know, I'll get these questions like, what are you doing? Like, are you not paying attention? I'm like, I'm here. I'm listening. What are you talking about? You know, maybe I'm not saying aha or, you know, like these little interjections enough to provide feedback. You know, I'm multitasking. I'm looking at something on the screen. So, and the reason I say that is because it goes back to that quote you started, or something you said, what does this moment tell me about myself? Mm. And so it's actually, I have to see it as a gift, like really great feedback. I have learned when our phone conversation starts, I need to walk away from the screen. I need to go sit down and, you know, give myself the full attention as a gift to the other person. But what I'm also wondering is, in our, you know, hyperactive checklist world, accomplishment, et cetera, you know, what reminders can we give ourselves to, you know, maybe do less, but do it wholly, fully, you know? So there's that temptation of trying to balance the two. So anything you have to say about that would be very welcome.
I think you're absolutely right. We live in a world in which our worthiness is tied to our production. And when we change and let our worthiness not be defined by our production, but merely by the fact that we are completely whole people in this moment, exactly as it is. When I became disabled and unable to work, one of the things that happened for me is I wasn't able to produce in the same kinds of ways and the same amount that I was. And I had to really change what are the ways in which I define myself. And so part of my practice is to really look at, well, how am I defining myself in this moment, right? Now in Zen, we train and it's like, you know, do one thing completely. So, you know, we go work in the kitchen and all we get to do is just chop the carrots. But then you get out in the world, right? And you're like, oh, I've got a talk to prepare for. I've got this thing I have to do. I have to go, you know, run these errands and get these medications and do these things. And then your friend calls and it's like, I still need to accomplish all these things. And I think it's really easy to then get caught up in the doing rather than the being. And so for me, part of that question always is, well, how am I defining myself? And does that work for me as a definition in this moment? Sometimes it's really important for me to define myself by what I'm producing. But that's not in conversation with a friend of mine. That's not in giving a Dharma talk. That's not in meeting with my patients. It is in getting charting done and, you know, doing the other things I have to do, feeding myself, right? So I think it's really important for us to really look at how am I defining myself and does it work for me in this moment? And recognize that our definition of ourselves can change constantly because as we move throughout our day, who we are is different in each moment. Because we need to be different in each moment to be fully present in that moment. And so it's not that one is better than the other. Producing is valid and important when it's valid and important. But if that's all I am, then I lose out on this other stuff. And it's very important to be present and completely aware and all the way in the moment, in the moments that that's really important and valid. So to allow ourselves to be different, to allow ourselves to use our practice, right? Like sometimes I sit down and, oh my God, it's so easy, right? Like I sit down and my posture just automatically falls into the place and like my mind settles and my body settles and it's just like, oh, and then the bell rings and I'm like, oh, it's super easy. And then there's other times when it's just like a, you know, hamster on a wheel up here and like I can't get comfortable and it always feels like my head's out of whack. And it's just the whole time I'm just, and why did the Dohan fall? Did the guy who's supposed to ring the bell, did he fall asleep? Because it just seems like this is going on forever. And it's anything but easy. Both of those are valid parts of practice. both of those have opportunities for me to learn something. So not one's not better than the other. They're just different. And they both ask me to be different. Bob.
When you were talking earlier, especially about being on the airplane, and you used the word paranoid. And I'm thinking, especially these days, every time I go out, I know there's COVID out there. I wear a mask. Mm-hmm. When I cross the street, I look both ways. I'm aware of the risks. But am I being paranoid or am I just being cautious? Mm.
Good question. I don't know. What I know is that I try to not let my awareness of the dangers that are in the world trap me like they did on the plane, right? Like it just took over my entire ability to focus on anything other than that fear and other than that awareness of there's disease out there. There's danger in the world, right? And I think that's not particularly helpful or useful. Maybe it is. I don't know. I know in that moment, during that 5 hours, I wasn't able to focus on anything other than my fear, which allowed my fear to get really big at certain points, right? Like I could feel it in my body, like the shortness of breath and my chest tightening. And I would have to just kind of be like, okay, let's bring some space here and talk myself through it, right? Like my anxiety would ramp up. So I think that that's different than looking both ways before I cross the street or making sure I wear my mask whenever I go out or, you know, the other ways that I take care of the moment. But it's not the only part of that moment, right? Did that make sense?
Sort of. I mean, maybe it's just different ways of looking at the world. I don't want to be afraid of the world.
Right.
And so for me, the word paranoia implies fear, and I don't want to be that way. So I try to look at things as, well, what could happen? Okay, I'll do this. It's just a precaution.
Right.
And I hope I get through life as safely as possible, which doesn't mean that at one point in my life I was in a car accident and I had a broken neck. I mean, there's all sorts of things that can happen.
Right.
But I'm not going to worry about it every time I get in a car now that I could get a broken neck. I just take the precaution while I'm driving to drive as safe as I can to the best of my knowledge.
Right. Yeah. And I think that that's still like there. I think there's a healthy fear, right? Like there is a way in which it's good to be a little nervous about when I go into the grocery store, you know, it's good to be a little nervous because it's going to keep me from doing the things that are more dangerous than I need them to be, right? Like touching my face without washing my hands or, you know, not wiping down the cart or going in without my mask. Like the things, like I think there's a healthy fear. And then there's the fear that sort of overtook me, right? So I think they're different. I think some fear is okay and it's normal. Like it's just part of life, right? And then there's the other fears that don't need, that overtake us, that trap us, that we get overpowered by. We give them much more importance than any other thing. And maybe it's just me, because I also do have, you know, an anxiety disorder. And so it's easy for me to get over anxious and ruminate. So it could just be me and my own reactions. But I have to also be mindful that I don't get too haphazard I guess. Like, for a long time, my response to my fear was to just deny that I was afraid and then do things that were dangerous, which isn't helpful either, because it takes me out. Like, I'm not able to then, if I can't admit that I'm, when I'm afraid, then I can't, I'm not really in that moment either. So I think it's a balance. I think it's a little of both. And there's nothing that I feel that's necessarily in and of itself bad or a problem.
We may be heading to an issue of semantics and how each of us uses words.
Yeah.
And there's no right or wrong answer in that case.
Right. That's probably true.
Thank you.
I appreciate your bringing that in. And how is that for other people? What do other people think about that? This difference between fear and paranoia? Chris?
You know, anytime I go on an airplane, COVID or not, to go take the taxi, then through TSA, then take half your clothes off, then get your clothes back on, and then wait on those things, and then get into that tube, and you're worried about bugs, it's just going to hike it up. For me, consistently, when I fly now, I carry a mala, and as soon as the little flutter of the wings start going on, or someone starts to act out, I get the mala out, and I just start going for it. Make a real strong practice, because the fear is just accentuated, for sure. God, you said so much in your talk that brought up a lot of stuff for me. Thank you. I think the bottom line is just, where's my awareness right now? And how is it, what's clouding over my awareness right now? So, you know, it's interesting. People have always, this has always been a little bit, I should say, not a struggle, but something interesting for me when people say, how are you? You know, walk into a room and so someone says, oh, how are you? And for the longest time, I would answer, well, you know, so-and-so just died, so I'm not, whatever it is, I get a little deep on them right away. And they're just like running a fine out of you, you know, and it's like, it already throws off, am I aware in the world or aware with me? My perception's off. I have to always look at my perception. You know, I just recently started looking at cognitive biases, the things social psychologists look at, and there's some wonderful ones out there. And there's one called an attribution error. It's where you, you know, I know you, but if you came in late from whatever we're supposed to meet, I'll attribute that being late like a mark on you. It's just going to be a mark that's put there. And it's an attribution that's putting it on you as a person that has many different, you know, I'm late too, right? But there's something that humans do. We attribute an action that occurs to be longstanding on that person. Does that make sense? So yeah. I think when I think Juan was brought that up about, you know, has these issues with people that come up, and I mean, who doesn't, right? I mean, we're all kind of talk about that. We all have our own. But I, when I'm looking at that bias that I have, I do. I attribute people's actions, like if they wash dishes lousy, I would attribute them on their character. And it's just sort of a natural thing people do. It's just, it's a kind of a cop out that way, but it's a really good thing for me to look at. So at the bottom, yeah, go ahead.
And it's also the way that I make those, and it often is tied to how I attribute those things to myself, right?
Right.
Right. Like, I had a friend once tell me that cleanliness wasn't a moral issue. And I got really offended by that, because in like my ideas about my cleanliness did tie into my own ideas about morality. And so, which then influenced how I saw other people and their connections to cleanliness. And so, yeah, the way we attribute to other people and then we lock them in, but that also says something about how it is that we make those same marks on our own identity. Right. And lock that in.
Certainly. Yeah, there's certainly. I actually am in seventh heaven because I just got a new Dyson wand vacuum cleaner. So I'm picking up the storm. This has been nirvana for me this whole weekend, but I just love to share that with people. You know, I thought I was going to win the lottery for this week. I never played the lottery, but it was $1 billion where I was like, oh, what the hell? I'm going to. And it was wonderful. I spent like half an evening imagining what I would do with all this money, you know. Bet on getting some cash. Stacy, you know, I'm going to, you know, I'm first class to the moon, right? And it, the fantasies failed, and I knew they were probably not going to happen. And I kind of put that aside when I realized they didn't win. And I go, okay, what's next in my life now? Sort of, what's my awareness right now? How I'm going to step forward? That's just sort of blathering on. But anyway, thanks for your talk.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you for bringing that forward, because I think it clarified something in my own mind. So I appreciate your adding things. Anyone else want to have another word? Well, I'll turn it back over to our fearless leaders and hosts.
All right. All right. Thank you very much, Dagan. Are there any announcements for today? Chris?
Yeah, I just have an announcement. Laura Burgess emailed me last night. She's doing a retreat Labor Day weekend, a recovery retreat. She's going to work on the 11th step. And she just wanted me to let the Sangha know, and I'll send the flyer she sent to me by email. I'll send it to our Google group so people can see it if they're interested.
Mike?
Yes, I have some really sad news about a member who hasn't been here for a while. His name is Paul Shepherd, who's a very close friend of mine. And he passed away in his sleep on Monday night. That was just about a week ago. Nobody knows the exact cause. Peaceful, though. Peaceful. And he will no longer be with us. He actually was at GBF near the beginning when it was still called the Gay Buddhist Fraternity, I think, back in the early 90s, either when it started or shortly after it started. He may have been part of the founding of it, but he was very active until he started having health issues and then some fatigue, so he stopped coming too often after about 2010 or so. He'd been here a few times. Anyway, we've lost him. He was a wonderful man, great contribution, a very serious practitioner. He'd been here whenever he could. So, be sad for all of us, especially me and a few close friends here. Die peacefully in his sleep. Any questions you can ask me after? I'll hang on for a while after we call.
Thank you, Mike. We were talking about him before the meeting today, and we dedicated the merit of our meditation together to him today. Having said that, I think we all agree that it's like the people that were before the meeting, that it would be wonderful to have his picture with us today for the next week so that we can keep him in mind. And for those of us that actually, didn't get to meet him in person, we can have his picture to dedicate the merit of our practice moving forward again.
If you have a picture of him, that would be great.
Let me get back. Sorry, okay. I wasn't here earlier because I've been blown out and not getting much sleep the last 3 days with all the phone calls and emotional feelings. Yes, there are pictures. I'll have to find a pretty good one. I found a couple, but I don't have a lot. So I'm sure by in the next 2 or 3 weeks, maybe by next week, we'll have a better picture. I might even be able to do this Sangha next week from his apartment, if possible.
Great. Thank you, Mike. Bob?
Yes, just a reminder that we have an online Zoom group on meeting on Wednesdays from 7:30 to 9. There's no formal speaker, but sometimes there's a theme, and it's a very intimate sharing of personal experiences and thoughts. And we encourage people to show up, see if they like it, come and go as they please.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah, I really like those meetings. Jack?
Hi. Well, this is a practical announcement. If it's Jack, it's about the newsletter. So we have a newsletter coming up at the end of this month, and since we're not meeting in person this month, we need to do it remotely like we did a year and a half during the height of the COVID epidemic. So I am calling for a couple of volunteers who I need about a half a dozen who can pick up a bunch of newsletters from me. Not a huge amount, and stuff on, fold them, stuff envelopes, and then mail them. I'll have everything else prepared, but I need a couple of other people. The four of you who have already volunteered know who you are. So if you can, please contact me for now, if you are so moved, or let me know. My email's on the GBF phone and address list. So appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack. Cass, do we have a host today, or should I make the host announcements about Donna and all of that?
You're the host, too.
Okay. So in that case, I'd like to remind you all that Donna is the Pali word for generosity. And your generosity is very appreciated, because the donations that we suggest between $10 and $20 help the Sangha meet its expenses. These include the honorary for our Dharma speakers, the rent for the place that we rent in Bartlett Street, and our quarterly newsletter that Jack was talking about. So if there are not any other announcements, we would like to dedicate the merit of our practice now. Daigan, would you like to do so, or?
Do we know next week's speaker?
It's Leanne. It's
a small group discussion next week?
Leanne speaking next Sunday.
Oh, Leanne. Okay, great. Leanne Schutt?
Yeah, Leanne Schutt. She's a lineage holder in the Shunryu Suzuki tradition, went to Buddhist family in Vietnam. She received her meditation training in the Insight and Zen traditions in the U.S., Thailand, Japan, and Vietnam.
Okay. We dedicate the merit of our time together today to our friend and Sangha member, Paul Shepherd, to all those throughout space and time who are grieving. May they all find ease and comfort. May we all find liberation. May we, with all beings, be free of suffering and the roots of suffering. May we all find peace. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Daigan.
Thank you, Daigan.
Thank you for listening to the Gay Buddhist Forum. If you would like to hear several new talks per month and be notified of upcoming speakers so you can participate live, please subscribe to this podcast, like us on Facebook, and join our mailing list by visiting gaybuddhist.org.